Hi, this is just to let you know this podcast is an actual practical workshop. So you're going to need to be sat down with the actual Arnold Baker book in front of you. Julie will be walking through that book. She is using edition 14, and all the page numbers and chapters will align with that book. So if you're on a older version, the chapters are probably okay, but the page numbers will be different. So in order to make the most out of this podcast, I advise you to be sat down with the book in front of you. Otherwise, it might not make so much sense if you're just listening to it while in the car or walking the dog. Anyway, that's just a warning for you to make the most out of this podcast. Have the book in front of you. Thank you very much. Back to Pod on the Parish. This is, I think, episode 7. I've got Julie King here. She's going to be speaking about unlocking the power of the Big Yellow Book. We're going to find out a bit more about that in a minute. But how are you doodling? How are you doing, Julie?
I don't do much doodling. I'm not an artist. But hello, John. Good, nice to see you this morning. So
awesome.
I'm good. Thank you. I'm good.
Good, good, good. And where are you based, Julie?
So based in Norfolk, I actually live in South Norfolk, so on the east of the country.
Yes, and I'm just down the road from you. Up the road from you, aren't I? Yeah, North.
Yes.
North Horsham. So tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do? How long have you been in the industry? Are you a noob or a veteran?
So I fell into this like many people do about 20 years ago. Somebody said it was just a little bit of admin work that you could do from home, and it opened up a whole new world I knew nothing about. And since then, I've become strangely fascinated in this world. So I've clerked for about 20 years. I've trained for 15 of those years. I am now a partner with Norfolk Parish Training and Support, providing training and support to parishes, mainly in Norfolk, but Norfolk and beyond, since we've become a little bit more virtual. I'm now on my degree journey, so I've just started the community governance degree.
Oh,
But I'm
well
still
done.
learning in this sector as you continually do.
Oh, cool. We'll learn. I mean, you'll share more about your role during the webinar, but we also like to know a little bit more about people. So is there something about you that not most people don't know about you?
I said I can't draw and I can't, but I can crochet.
Oh.
So I'm a keen crocheter, maybe. I combined my love of crochet and my love of the North Norfolk coast on Saturday. I sat on Holcombe Beach, which you will know, John,
Yeah.
crocheting a small swan.
That is very mindful. Yeah, that is definitely a good de-stressing. You know, you're fully focused in a nice environment. So did you go up there on your own?
I did actually on Saturday. I'm not often up there on my own, but I was on my own there on
That
Saturday.
is awesome. That's a nice bit of me time. What's your most proudest piece?
Oh, that I've crocheted.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I do lots of little things at the moment, but I've done blankets. So I did a blanket for a friend's daughter, which had an elephant head incorporated into the blanket. That was a fun one to do.
Good. Oh yeah, so yeah, I guess you have some kind of pattern you follow. Awesome. So we're talking about the yellow book, Roger Taylor. We've had Roger Taylor speak a few times. But yeah, for the average person on the street who knows nothing about town and parish councils at all and thinks they're about
Vicar
something
of
through the
Dibley.
church. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how would you describe the yellow book?
I think we described it in our description, didn't we, as the Bible. It's the local council Bible. It details legislation concerning parish and town councils.
Good. And what's one mistake you would say people do in relation to this topic just before we go into the webinar?
I think
If you could
people
predict
are,
what the question's going to
yeah,
be almost.
people are almost immobilized by it because they don't understand the legislation, they don't understand the book. They're scared of it and they're immobilized by it.
Yes. Yeah, I mean the Bible, call it the Bible, and then that is scary straight away
It
because
is,
it
yeah,
feels like
exactly.
insurmountable, not something you can sort of pick up. Maybe you have to like lock into it. Good. So yeah, it's a popular topic. We have 290 people registered, so I expect probably around 150 will be joining us. But yeah, let's jump in and go and say hello.
Okay, yeah, brilliant.
To-do list,
Yeah,
definitely.
well done, well done. Okay, morning everyone. Lovely, lovely to see you this morning. I'm just going to share my screen, and I find I'm not very good at talking and doing that at the same time. So this is me. I'm partnered with Norfolk Parish Training Support. As John said, I've been clerking for 20 years. I've been training in the sector now for 15 years. If you've got a copy of the Yellow Book, if you can have that in front of you, that will help because we're going to have a go at using it. So if you need to just go and grab it off your shelf, then please do. If you've also got a collection of post-it notes, sticky labels, something you can stick in and mark the book, that's also going to help you. A little plug for CCLA. Have you had CCLA on yet, John? A little plug
We've got
for
them
CCLA.
coming up in a couple of in a few in
They
this
do
season, yes.
fantastic little, oh, I can't get it in focus, can I? Fantastic little labels for this purpose. So if anyone's got any of those, that will be really, really handy as well. Okay, I've got the 14th edition in front of me. I'm guessing that some of you will have different editions, so we'll try and talk page numbers, but it's not going to work all the time. So we might have to help each other as we go through. So what am I aiming to do? Well, I want us to explore the different sections of the Yellow Book so that you understand how it's laid out, how to navigate it. And you're right, it's not very searchable, but we'll try our best to unlock some of that. And I'm hoping if you've got it in front of you, that you can give it a try. So for and I know somebody said at the beginning they've never heard of it, they don't know anything about the Yellow Book. I thought I'd start with, what is it and where did it start? So when it was first published, it was published as Parish Administration at that time, by a gentleman called Charles Arnold Baker, and I'll talk a little bit more about him in a moment. First published in 1958. So it's been around a little while, which is why we're now at the 14th edition. And as you can see from some of the ones that I've put on there, Charles Arnold Baker did it for several editions. Paul Claydon took over from Charles Arnold Baker and he edited it for a while. And the current editor of the book is Roger Taylor. He's Roger Taylor of Weller Solicitors. And as John said, he's spoken at several of these. So he's the current author of the book, called lots of different things. So we've called it the Yellow Bible already, the Big Yellow Book. Obviously, it's called Local Council Administration. I've heard people call it CAB, Charles Arnold Baker. So it has lots of different names, but that's the book that we're meaning. This chap is interesting if you're into that kind of thing. This is Charles Arnold Baker. He was born in Germany. Born in Germany under the name of Wolfgang Charles Werner von Blumenthal. Was his name when he was born. Came to England with his English mother, took on his stepfather's surname, Arnold Baker, and became Charles Arnold Baker. Having come to England, he was then an MI6 officer in the Second World War. So again, interesting. And following the Second World War, became a barrister and civil servant, dealt with public administration. He spent a lot of his time defending parish and town councils and actually won an OBE for his work. He then became sort of head of what we now call NALC, National Association of Local Councils. And I think it was during that time he first started to write down the legislation, mainly to help him with answering questions that he had. He also became an academic lecturer. So he's author of a one-man history book called The Companion to British History, which was published in 1996. Not one I've read, but apparently it combined scholarship, he was eccentric, readability. Apparently it's a readable book and it's a huge book. He finally died in 2009, aged 90. But that's a bit by the by, isn't it? But he is an interesting man. Okay, so let's have a little look at this book. And for those of you that got them, we'll have a little book and we're literally going to open it. I'm going to open mine at the beginning of the book and I'm going to flick through the first few pages. And I only get to about page two in mine. And it has this phrase in it: to the knowledgeable amateurs without whom democracy is impossible. For those of you that are clerks, that's to you. Yeah, you are the knowledgeable amateurs without whom democracy is impossible. I like that. I like that. And I think that's one of Charles Arnold Baker's. Okay, we're going to continue on. So continue on beyond that quote. There's a couple of preface. So there's a preface in there from Roger Taylor, the current author. And then there's also one in there from Charles Arnold Baker. Both are a little bit interesting. You're into that kind of thing. If you want to start reading, John, you could start there. Look, learn about those people. Only a couple of pages long. And then if you continue on there, I'm now at the contents page. I've got some nods. Anyone got as far as the contents page? Yeah, I've got one or two nods. Good. Okay. I should say contents pages, shouldn't I? Because it's not just one page. Have a little flick through the contents and you'll see it runs to, oh gosh, I'm beyond a dozen, maybe 15 pages, do you think? of the contents page. So several in there. You'll see that the contents page starts with part one, and part one is matters common to England and Wales. So this is the bit that is common to both England and Wales. The legislation is a little bit different between England and Wales, but part one deals with England and Wales. And you'll notice as you flick through the contents that part one extends all the way up to chapter 33. And you see that you've got chapter one to chapter 33. And within those chapters, you've got subheadings, and we'll look at those as we go through. Okay. Part two is a bit smaller. Part two is the bit that is just for Wales. Have we got anyone from Wales? Put your hand up if you're from Wales. Anyone from Wales? Yeah, I can see one person waving at me from Wales. Welcome from Wales. You're about as far away from me as you can get, aren't you? We're opposite sides of the country. So the part two is just for those people in Wales. Chapters 34 to 36 are for those people in Wales. Those people in England, please ignore chapters 34 to 36. They don't apply to you. Okay. All right. Are you keeping an eye on chat, John? I'm going to stop me if there's anything huge
Yes,
that comes
well, we'll
in.
do Q&A at the end.
Brilliant. Okay, brilliant. All right. If we get beyond, we're still in the contents page at the moment. You'll see beyond the England and Wales bit, we've got two appendices. We've got a statutes, which is Appendix One, and we've got statutory instruments, which is Appendix Two. Statutes are acts, legislation. Statutory instruments are regulations. And then right at the back, we've got an index. Okay, so we've learned all that from the contents page. That's how the book is laid out. Okay, going to go on beyond the contents page. We've got a bit of a definitions. We've got some abbreviations. We've got a table of statute. You still flicking through? Yeah. Lots of statutes, and we've got some cases. And then finally, we come to the beginning of the chapter. We come to part one, and chapter one is entitled History. Now, if you've got a post-it note or a little sticky label, I'd start by sticking it in that page. That's the beginning of your chapters. Okay. The chapters are legal interpretation. So this is what the three authors have written about our legislation over time. Legislation is interesting, isn't it? Before I came into this sector, I thought legislation was black and white. I thought it's what we can and we can't do. And then I learned there was lots of grey. It's all about interpretation. And this is the bit that will help you with the interpretation. This is the chapters that help you with the interpretation. So if you've got a post-it note, you've got the book in front of you, stick one in there at the beginning of that. Okay. Now, the chapters go on for some time. And you'll notice the chapters then have subheadings. So let's see whether we can find chapter seven, because it's one of the meatier chapters and one that relates to meetings. Okay. So if you have a look at chapter seven, for mine, that starts on page 41, if that helps anyone. Yeah. And you'll see that chapter seven starts with 7.1. Yeah, I can see some people looking. So they're obviously looking through the book. Starts with 7.1, 7.2, followed by 7.3. It's fairly logical. Bear in mind there is a difference between 7.3 and 7.30. So 7.30 will come after 7.29 and before 7.31. Yeah. Okay. So there's a difference between those two. Okay. So that's the chapters. That's the legal interpretation. We're going to carry on beyond that and see whether we can find the start of the first appendix. So remember the chapters went all the way up to chapter 35. So flick all the way through to chapter 35. You'll notice the top right and top left of your pages tell you which chapter you're on. So if you're currently looking at 10, you need to go a lot further until you finally get to chapter 35. Oh, that's the English, isn't it? And then we're a little bit on the Welsh. It's not big. Chapter 36, on the Welsh. Okay. And then we come to the beginning of the statutes. So for me, that's on page 345. Anyone got that far? Yeah, got one or two nods. Yeah. Okay. So I'm hoping we're now at Appendix One, statutes. This is the beginning of the details of the acts, the legislation. Okay. Now, this bit is printed out for us in the book, but is also available online. So if you find it easier to search online, this bit is actually online. All you have to do is put the legislation into whichever search engine you use, and it'll bring it up for you. Look at legislation.gov, and you'll find that out. Okay. But this first bit is the statutes. Statutes are listed in chronological order. So if you flick through the first couple, you'll see that we start in the 1800s. And one of the major ones is the 1894, which is where we all started, isn't it? It was in 1894. Okay. You'll notice that at the top of the pages, at the left top of the left-hand page, it says statutes. So you know you're in Appendix One statutes. And at the top of the right-hand page, it's got which statute you're looking at. So you're looking at the year. And as you flick through, we will get to the more recent. Flick through all of those statutes, goes a long way. Yeah, make sure you've still got statutes in the top left-hand corner and flick through all the way through the statutes. Okay, and then we come to the statutory instruments or the regulations. I'm on page 881 now. And again, mark that if you've got a marker, and that's the beginning of your regulations. Again, these are in chronological order, starting with the oldest and ending with the newest. So we start in 1912. And we work our way all the way through to, has this got procurement in it? I don't know. No, 2016 is the last one I've got in mind. Okay, so that's statutory instruments. And once you get beyond that, you're on the index page. Anyone made it to the index page? Yeah, good. Still getting some nods. Thank you to those people I can see that are saying yes. That's really helpful. Okay, now we're at the index. Another marker for your index. I don't know what I got up to. Okay. So we've now got a book that we can now fully understand. Starts with the chapters, the legal interpretation. It goes on to the legislation or the acts or the statutes. It then does the statutory instruments or the regulations and then an index at the back. That's how the book is laid out. Okay. The last thing that I'm going to get you to have a little look at and mark before we start using it is the 1972 Local Government Act, because you won't be surprised to hear a lot of the legislation that we use is in the 1972 Local Government Act. So go back to that section that is statutes to Appendix 1, and we're looking for Local Government Act 1972. So you want statutes on the top left-hand side of your page and Local Government Act 1972 in the top right-hand side of your page. Okay, now I'm on page 413. Again, if that gives you some idea. So, this is the major one that we're going to be turning to when we look at legislation. Now, the 1972 Local Government Act starts with lots of sections. So, it starts with section 9. You'll notice it didn't start with section 1, and that is the advantage of looking at legislation in this book as opposed to online, because it only gives you the bits of legislation that apply to our sector. If you look at legislation online, you get all of the legislation, and some of the 1972 Local Government Act only actually applies to principal authorities, to our unitary, to our county, to our district, and our borough councils. It doesn't apply to us, and it can become confusing if you read their legislation as opposed to ours. So that is the advantage of reading the legislation in this book, because Roger Taylor has only put the bits in that are relevant to us. Okay, so you can see 1972 Local Government Act starts with section 9. And if you take that all the way through, it ends with section. No, I haven't. I'll look it up. It ends with section 273. Yeah, 273 is on page 502 for me. So they are the sections of the 1972 Local Government Act. So, if you mark the beginning of the 1972 Local Government Act, we're going to do one more mark in the 1972 Local Government Act, and that is Schedule 12. Because once you get past the sections, once you've got to Section 273, we get Schedule 1 and we get Schedule 11. But if you carry on past that, we've got Schedule 12. Schedule 12 is on page 505 of my book. Anyone got as far as Schedule 12? Yeah, again, I'm getting nods. Okay. Anyone telling me to stop, John, and going far too quick? No, it's good so far. Okay. All right. So we're on Schedule 12 of the 1972 Local Government Act. Mark that one, because we're going to come back to that as well, because again, a lot of our legislation is in Schedule 12 of the 1972 Local Government Act. Okay. We've done all that. Right, let's have a play and see whether we can make this book work for us now. So we're going to look up some things that you might want to know. So here are my suggestions. What about the quorum? Now, those of you that have been in the sector long enough will probably know that the quorum for a parish council meeting, the minimum number of councillors we need present, is a third or three, whichever is the greater. But if you didn't know, or if you wanted to know a little bit more about that, what about if I've got some vacancies? Do they count or don't they count? How does that work? Let's look up the quorum. So we're going to start at the back in the index, and we're going to look for quorum. Okay, alphabetical order. Let's find quorum. Okay, so underneath quorum, I've got four choices. I've got community meetings. Now, community meetings are to do with Wales. We're called parish and town councils in England. We're called community councils in Wales. So I can see Katrina Williams, because you happen to be on my screen and are nodding at me and saying you're Welsh. So I think you're going to find your quorum bits is 35.15. Yeah. Okay. But for those of us that are in England, we have local councils. Yeah. Parish meetings are for those areas that are not, don't have a town or parish council. They have a parish meeting. That's their quorum. And we also have parish meetings, don't we? We typically hold one around this time of year, don't we? But what we're actually interested in for the vast majority of it is local councils. So you can see you've got two choices there. You've got 6.1 and 7.9. People got that far. Yeah, so we've got quorum, we've got local councils, and we're looking at 6.1 or 7.9. Now, what does 6.1 and 7.9 mean? Well, now we're back to our chapters at the front. Yeah, so what we need to look at is chapter 6.1 or 7.9. So I'm going to start with chapter 6.1. And when I get there, I'll tell you the page number in my book. Page number in my book is 27. And 6.1 starts, a local council is a body corporate with perpetual succession and a name. It is composed of a chairman or town mayor and councillors. The number of councillors is fixed by the principal authority. In England, it must not be less than five councillors. In Wales, no statutory minimum is specified. Interesting. All right, we're not really interested in that bit. That's not what we're after, were we? Interesting it was, that doesn't really tell us what we meant by quorum. So we find actually, no, 6.1, whilst interesting, is not what we want to know. Excuse me. So let's try 7.9. So we're going to go on to 7.9. So 7.9 is on page 45 in my book. See people rummaging. Okay. And 7.9 says the quorum is a three or one third of the total membership of the local council, whichever is the greater. But where more than one third of members are disqualified at the same time, the quorum is either three or one third of the qualified members, whichever is the greater, until such time as the membership has been increased to not less than two thirds of the total. So that's the legal interpretation. That's Roger Taylor's, or maybe Charles Arnold Baker's or Paul Claydon's words about what quorum means. So the quorum is a third, is three or one third of the total membership of the local council, not the current sitting councillors, but the total membership. So that's answered our question. What about if we've got vacancies? Irrelevant. Doesn't alter our quorum. What about if we want to dig just a little bit deeper and we want to see what does the legislation actually say? This is what Roger Taylor thinks, but what does the legislation actually say? Well, you'll notice that after that sentence that I read, there's a little one, and underneath it, there's one as a footnote, and it talks about Local Government Act 1972, Schedule 12, paragraph 12, 28, and 45. So those of you that had post-it notes, you marked up your Schedule 12. So if you now stick to flick to your Schedule 12, Schedule 12 is page 505 in my book. Paragraph 12 is the first one he mentions. So let's see what the legislation actually says. So I'm Schedule 12, paragraph 12 on page 506. And it says, subject to paragraph 45 below, no business shall be transacted at a meeting of a parish council unless at least one third of the whole number of members of the council are present at the meeting. But notwithstanding anything in that paragraph, in no case shall the quorum be less than three. So that's what the legislation actually says. Okay. So we've started with the thought we need to find out about quorum. Because I don't know how many members are going to turn up to my meeting tonight. I'm getting a bit concerned. I'm not sure there's going to be enough of them. I can't quite remember what it is about the quorum. Let me look it up. Started in the back in the index. I looked up quorum. I went to the front. I looked up the chapters. I saw what Roger Taylor said about it. And then I've finally gone to the legislation. I've had a read. Okay. Hopefully that's starting to make a bit more sense to some people. Any major questions on that, John, or has everyone seemed to follow that?
All seems good, but yeah, we'll do questions at the end.
Questions at the end. Okay, fair enough. All right. Okay, should we try a couple more? Yeah. All right. Next one we're going to have a little look for is publishing the register of interests. So You'll be aware that
Actually,
when
I'll hold
councils.
you there, Julie,
Yeah, go on.
because maybe we can take questions during those sections as you close them off. So we do have
Okay.
a couple. What if there are 10 councillors? Is the quorum 9 or 10?
If your total membership is 10, yeah, the quorum is the greater of a third or a three. So three is three. A third of 10 is 3.333 reoccurring, isn't it? I've never seen 0.33 of a councillor walk into a room. So unless you can find a third of a councillor, you're going to need four of them because you need at least three and a third. Okay.
Cool. Thank you.
Anything else on that?
No, there was nothing else.
No. Brilliant. Okay. All right, let's have a little look at publishing register of interests. So, councillor joins your council, or maybe you're going to have elections this week and you're going to have new councillors. You're aware that they have to fill in a register of interest form. Yeah. That register of interest form is returned to the monitoring officer. The monitoring officer has to publish it on their website, but you're probably also aware it has to be published on your website. So, what we're going to do is look up where does it say that and why? What's the bit about publishing register of interest? So, let's start with register of interest. So, we'll go to the back of the book in the index. We'll look at register of interests. Okay, so difference here between England and Wales. So, Katrina and any other colleagues that we've got in Wales. Oh, no, actually, it's the same, isn't it? It's 7.12. And that's in the as in England is 7.12. Okay, got that. So we've gone to the index, we've gone to register of interests. We've found that where we need to look at is 7.12. Okay, so we're going to go to the chapters bit at the front. We're going to go to 7.12. 7.12 on mine is page 47. Yeah. Okay, I'm not going to read all of 7.12. But the bit that's relevant here is the second paragraph. So the register must be available for public inspection at a place within the principal authority's area at all reasonable hours and must be published on that principal authority's website. The register must also be published on the local council website. So there you go. There it says that we must publish it on our website. Where's the bit of legislation that tells us that? So again, we've got a little one underneath that. So we're going to go to one and we're going to go to Localism Act 2011, section 29. Yeah. Okay. So again, we can look up Localism Act 2011. This is a statute because it's an act. So you need statute in the top left-hand corner of your page and 2011 in the right-hand corner. We've also got a Charities Act in 2011. And I think the Local Government Act comes after the Charities Act. I guess it's now alphabetical order, isn't it? So flicking through mine. Localism Act 2011, section 29. Well, I'm on page 830. Okay. So here in section 29 is all the details about what has to happen with the register of interest form. And then you're looking at the legislation. While people continue to look at that. Any questions on that one, John?
No questions, but we. Oh, and yeah, so just rewind a little bit on Jodie. She did ask about the quorum. Is that for committees as well, or can we follow standing orders?
No, follow standing orders, Jodie. So your terms of reference for the committee should specify the quorum. Practically, it can't be less than three people because if you have a quorum of two, then the chair is always going to get the casting vote. So you need at least a minimum of three for any committees.
Cool. And then Jane is asking, what if councillor changes day jobs during their time as councillor? Do we republish in terms of publishing register of interests?
Yeah, absolutely. Councillors are responsible for keeping that register of interest up to date. It's not your responsibility as a clerk to do that for them. It's up to councillors to be aware of their own interests and keep it up to date. That said, we do quite a lot of prodding, don't we? So if you're aware that they've changed their job, then you might want to pass them a new form to fill in. Or if they do it electronically, send them the link, however it works for you. Again, it's not our job. But I have spoken to several clerks recently who've said, you know, actually, every May time, I send a link to the register of interest to all my councillors and say, this is what you've currently got registered. If you need to make changes, let me know. Whether you want to take that on board as a clerk or not is entirely up to you. But actually, it's something that I've decided as a clerk that once a year, I'll just nudge them. I'll say, this is what you've got registered. If it's not right, then it would be a good idea to update it. So, but up to you. Okay. All right. We're doing time-wise, yeah, not too bad. Okay, which one should we do next? We've done a couple of procedural ones. Might come back to the 6-month-old one, but let's have a little look at churchyard grass cutting, because this is often one that we're not sure about. And there's somebody at the beginning spoke about the fact they use the yellow book when they're doing their minutes, and I wonder whether they're a clerk that puts the powers in their minutes for the decisions that are made, and if so, that might be why they're using it. By the way, there is no requirement to put the powers in your minutes; you don't have to, but it's good practice, I guess. So let's have a little look at churchyard grass cutting. So we'll look under churchyard. And if we look under churchyards, there's several items there, but I think the one that we want is maintenance. So it's about churchyard maintenance. Okay. We've got a couple of options. We've got 25.2, and then we've got some sections in 33. So 25.2 and 33.3 and 33.5. Again, I can see people rummaging through. So if we go to 25.2, back at the front again. What does 25.2 say? So 25.2 for me is on page 251. Yeah, put about as far as page 251. And just trying to find the bit that. 33.5.2, yeah, is about there. So many, so it talks about maintaining visual places. And then if we go to the 33.3 to 33.5, 33, chapter 33 is a lovely name chapter, powers relating to the dead. Isn't that lovely? But it's about powers relating to the dead. And just trying to find the bit where it says that we can contribute towards the maintenance of the churchyard. So we've got a little bit about the parochial church council and about it's that bit. I can't read the I can't read that quick enough, and I should have highlighted the bit. But the actual piece of legislation, because I've got it written down, and actually in several places. It says that that is the one is section 214. So it's the 1972 Local Government Act, section 214. And yes, and again, if we go to the 1972 Local Government Act and we look up section 215, it's on page 477. And it talks about a burial authority may contribute towards any expense incurred by any other person in providing or maintaining a cemetery in which the inhabitants of the authority's area may be buried. You may be concerned that you're not a burial authority, but the beginning of section 214 talks about the fact that parish and parish councils are burial authorities with respect to that section. So have lots of questions about whether people can contribute towards churchyard grass cutting, and the answer is most certainly they can. Going to do one more, I think.
Before
And I
we
will
move
have.
on, there's a question on Register of Interest again. With Register of Interest from Chris Ring, he says, on my website, I link to the Reg on Principal Authority website. Should I publish it in full?
No, you're absolutely fine there. A link from your website to theirs is absolutely fine. Yeah. Also get lots of questions from time to time when people say, but the principal authority don't keep it up to date, and what do I do about that? And you can only do your best, can't you? The requirement is for the councillor to submit it to the monitoring officer to publish. It's between those two. But yeah, a link to their website is fine.
Christina asks, where does it state the local council has to advertise it?
Has to abs the Register of Interest.
I think so. That's what it's related to.
So that was Localism Act 2011, Section 29.
Cool. Okay.
So it says it in there.
Yeah, go on to your next. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
To the next one. The next one I'm going to do is the 6 month rule, the 6 month rule around council absence. I know we've also got the 6 month rule about not bringing items back to council meetings, but this one is regarding councillors' absence. So again, those of you that have been doing this for a while will be aware if a councillor doesn't attend any meeting for a continuous period of 6 months, and during that period their reason for absence hasn't been approved by the council, then they are no longer a councillor. The seat falls vacant. So want to have a look at how what's the details around that. And this is where I think the index is not so good. So the ones we've used so far, the index has been great. We've looked up quorum, we've looked up register of interest, we've looked up churchyards. It's worked for us, hasn't it? But the index is not quite so good for this one because, as somebody said at the beginning, I know it's a 6 month rule, but I'm not going to find a 6 month rule in this index. So a lot of things relating to meetings are under meetings. So if you look in the index under meeting, you'll find a big section. And we'll be able to find reference to this under meeting. So if you look under meeting and you look under councillor, you'll see there's councillor absence. Yeah. There's also, which points us to 7.13, and we're going to look at 7.13 in a minute. But if you also look at the under the index under meeting, there's also absence of member just straight under meeting, which is also 7.13. Okay, so again, pointing us in that direction, isn't it? Alternatively, we might have thought, well, this is not really to do with meetings, this is to do with the councillor, isn't it? Nothing comes under councillor, but it does come under local councillor. So if you look under local councillors, okay, look under local councillors, and again, absence, you'll see it points us to 7.13. Okay, so let's go and have a little look at 7.13 and see what 7.13 says. So 7.13 is on page 48. I'll let you get to 7.13 and then we'll just have a read of that. So once a member fails throughout 6 consecutive months to attend any meeting of the local council or of its committees or subcommittees of which they are a member, or of a joint committee, joint board, or other body to which any of the council's powers have been transferred or delegated, they cease automatically to be a member of the local council unless either they have a statutory excuse, broadly speaking, military service during war or an emergency, or if the failure is due to a reason approved by the local council before the end of the period, or they attended as a formally appointed representative of the local council at a meeting of any body of persons, such as a county association of local councils, to which they have been appointed a representative of the local council. This period begins with the last meeting attended, and the period runs even if there is no meeting subsequent to the last meeting attended. So some people think of this as not attending 6 meetings. It's not attending during a 6 month period. So if you only meet every other month, it's quite easy to miss this. And some councils only meet quarterly. So it only really means missing one meeting, doesn't it? Okay. So you can see that the legal reference at the bottom there is Local Government Act 1972, Section 85. So we'll go and find Section 85. So you've marked up 1972, you marked up Schedule 12. It's going to be between those two marks. And we're looking for Section 85. Section 85 in my book is on page 440. Okay. I'm not going to read all of Section 85, but now you can see the legislation.
Someone said, just can you say that again? 6 month period, not 6 meetings.
Yeah, so let's go back to 7.15, 7.13. So at the end of Roger Taylor's legal interpretation at 7.13, he talks about the period begins with the last meeting attended and the period runs even if there is no meeting subsequent to the last meeting attended. So the clock starts ticking at the last meeting that was attended. Yeah. And so if they attended last on the 11th of November, they've got 6 months from the 11th of November in order to attend a meeting or for you to approve their reason for absence or to go off to war. But that doesn't happen so often, does it? Thankfully. Okay. All right. So that's what I wanted to do this morning was to show you how to use the book. And hopefully for those of you that have followed it, you've got some idea about how it works. I'm quite happy to come back to any other questions we've got, John, and I was just going to tell them a little bit more about Norfolk Parish training and support as well.
Cool. Yes, I've got some questions. So does attendance at an event such as Carol Service Council, I assume that's a no.
No, I don't think that was in that list, was it? No.
No. We got other questions early. I mean, one thing people were initially worrying about is that they don't have the latest edition of is I guess you do have to keep up to date.
Yeah, you know, it depends what you're looking up. You know, if you're looking up something up in the 1972 Local Government Act, it largely hasn't changed since 1972, so you're probably quite safe. The most recent changes we've had are to do with the Procurement Act. So, you know, that's where you could fall foul. Prior to that, what was it? Data protection, wasn't it? 2018. So it depends on how far back you're going, depends on how out of date the book becomes. You can always check the legislation on legislation.gov,
Yeah, let's see. Cool.
because that's up to date.
Cool. Yeah, I see Angela's put her hand up. Anyone else who has a particular question, feel free to find the reactions there and add, you know, and I'll call you up to ask your question. I've got, before I go to Angela, we've got Jane asked about any other business on agendas. Just a bit more detail around that.
Okay, so the legislation is relating to the summons. So if you look up the summons, it will tell you that the summons must detail the business to be transacted at the meeting. So the summons you send to councillors must detail the business to be transacted. And I would argue, and the courts have argued, that any other business does not detail the business to be transacted. So you can have any other business on the agenda. There's nothing in the legislation that says you can't, but what you can't do is make any decisions under it. So it's dangerous because it tends to lead people to making decisions. While answering some of these slightly legal questions, John, I ought to make it perfectly clear. I am not, unlike Roger Taylor, a solicitor. I interpret law, so I'm not giving official legal advice. But if
Oh,
you like, well,
great.
I'll tell you a little bit about what Norfolk Parish Trainer Support do, and then I'm happy to hang around if people have still got questions. I'm not going anywhere. So this is my lovely group of people. So Laura and Sarah are there together. Laura has been a clerk for 10 years, Sarah for 15, and they help me train and support. Di Dan, you see in the middle there on her own. She was in the sector for 32 years, largely retired now, and has been teaching since 2005. Richard Bishop, some of you might know on the right-hand side there, ex-town clerk at Swaffham, been in the sector for 40 years, and then you see me looking kind of younger, I think. But anyway, 117 years experience between us. So that's us. Norfolk Parish Training Support, trading name of Local Council Training and Support LLP. So whilst we're mainly based in Norfolk, we're happy to help you beyond Norfolk if you'd like us to. Lots and lots of training that we do. So we do lots of training courses from allotments to year-end finance. Lots of year-end finance going on at the moment, isn't there? We also do twice yearly seminars, which we also broadcast, so people can join those virtually if they want to. We do networking. We do in-person networking. So any of you in Norfolk, then do come along and join us. But we also do online networking just to get clerks together. It's quite an isolated role for some people. Whole council training, we'll come out and train, or we'll do it online and train your whole council, and lots of induction. And then we also have a support service. So I won't run through all of those, but they're the kind of offers you get with our subscription service, including preferential rates with Scribe at the bottom there. So we're here, email, telephone, support Monday to Friday, 9 till 5. So that's a little bit about what we do. And there are our contact details. So if we can help you at all, do please get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. So.
Great stuff. Thank you, Julie. That was a good session. It was your first time coming to speak at Scribe Academy, so really appreciate you taking the time to do that. Also had some really good questions. So kind of wrapping it up, that session, what's one thing you would want your listeners to remember?
Well, I hope they remember how to use the book. And I suppose my hope for them is that actually it becomes their friend rather than their foe.
Yes, good. No, I think you've definitely got that message across during the session. So hopefully people will be picking or buying. I can't remember how much is the book?
It's a lot. It's a lot. I think it's around £150, a little shy of that if you're a member of SLCC, and a little more if you're not.
I actually haven't. What if the AIs have got hold of it? You know, and
Not yet, as
invested.
far as I'm aware. You know, it's not electronically
Yes.
held, which is a shame because it would
Yes.
be much easier to search if it was electronic.
So we're going to go back to learning a bit more about you. So I want you to take yourself back to when you're 18. Just describe your situation. What were you doing? What were you into? Who was Julie at 18? Where were you?
You know, I did A levels. So I was at the Hewitt School, again, somewhere you'll be aware of, John, living in Norfolk. So I was at a very large, for Norfolk, very large school in central Norwich. I was quite studious.
I see a book square.
I was a good student doing A
Oh,
levels. I wish I'd had more fun, really, to be honest.
yeah.
But
Yeah,
yeah.
my daughter is, yeah, she'll be at Hewitt on Tuesday doing her first A level exam.
Wow,
And
right,
she
okay.
is fully, she's studious. She's fully locked in at the moment. But she also takes time out to do other things. But yeah, she's fully ready to do her exam. So if you could go up to that Julie when you're at Hewitt, you just walk up to her, catch her in the path, and go, hi. Well, if you had to give her some bit of advice, what would you give her?
Chill.
Chill.
Nobody knows what they're going to do at 18, do they? I hadn't dreamt of this at 18. And when you speak to most people, once they've got into a career, they didn't dream of it when they were 18. So whilst there's lots of pressure to have a plan, just chill, let life happen.
Yeah, that's good advice. I mean, I completely flunked my A levels. But I went university later, in my mid-20s, and yeah, it seems like A levels, like it's just generally stuff in advice. Sometimes it seems so important. So you are fully locked in, taking it too seriously and thinking about your next paths. Good. Okay. Also, to wrap things up, we've got like the question from your previous the previous guest on the podcast. So Becky from CloudSky Coaching, she asked a really good question. If kindness was a currency, how could you spend £10 today?
Now, I'd like to come up with something really profound, but I'm going actually back to exams because I'm in a household at the moment with a daughter who's about to sit GCSE examinations. And personally, I'd say life will be okay, run with it. But I'd like to buy them all sweets to say how fantastic they're being at doing their exams.
Can't get many sweets for £10 now.
Well, no,
Don't have
people.
the half penny. Back at when you're at Hewitt's, you get the nice half penny sweets. Potentially, I don't know. But yeah, that's a good. Yeah, spend it on sweets. That's always cheers you up. Like, yeah, sometimes my team members here come through with a chocolate bar for me. I was like, yeah, that is a nice bit of kindness because they're thinking of you. That's good.
Absolutely.
Anyway, thanks a lot again for coming along to talk. What is your question for the next guest speaker?
Okay, so I'm going to stick with the legislation theme. So which bit of
Sounds like an
legislation,
exam.
yeah, is no, which bit of legislation would you change if you could, and why? If you've got somebody on from our sector next time, they can talk about local council legislation. But if it's somebody from outside, maybe it's some other legislation they'd like to change. So, John, thank you. Bye.